That's right. We got a live audience here.
Okay.
People are stoked to hear Sydney back in action on the Anti-Film Film Club. Here we are. And as usual, your host, Eric, and our new co-host,
Sydney.
Sydney. Which I'm really stoked. I'm stoked that we get to do this together. I'm stoked that you're here. And I'm stoked that we're prioritizing making this happen. We do enjoy watching a lot of films. We had a little bit of a competition on, what was the app?
Letterboxd.
And she's probably winning now, though I'm pretty sure I've seen more films in my lifetime. Because a lot of times we're seeing the same film now going forward. But you are watching other stuff that I haven't seen. Like the new part two of You. Right. But yep. Anyway, you were watching a movie, and to my shame, I hadn't seen it. And what movie was that?
Birdman.
Yeah. Okay. So we are revisiting Birdman, which was released in 2014. And this is going to be a critical look back at that film. And that was directed and written by Alejandro Iñárritu. I think, pardon me if I'm not saying that correctly, is it right? Iñárritu or
I don't know.
Something like that. Really great director, writer. This was a box office release, like I said, in 2014, earned $103.2 million at the box office and cost somewhere between 16 to 18 to make. And it's a dark comedy. And actually, it's interesting because we're recording this at the same time that the Oscars are going on. And the Oscar awards are happening. And this actually won 4 Oscars that year. Wow. It won for Best Picture. It won for Best Director, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Cinematography. There were nominations for Michael Keaton, Ed Norton, and Emma Stone, as well as sound editing and sound mixing. And then Keaton actually had won the Best Actor Golden Globe for this. And it was awesome. I was so taken back by how great it was. It was really well done. It's a dark comedy. And if you haven't seen Birdman, I don't know what you're waiting for. To my shame, I don't know what I was waiting for. I heard a lot of buzz about it and I had the intention to see it, but I think by the time I wanted to go see it, it wasn't in the theaters and it just kind of fell off into oblivion for me.
The father-daughter theme's challenging and difficult.
How did that land for you? I mean, this is really cool that we're unpacking it because we're a father-daughter team. There were the father-daughter themes with Regan Thompson, who was played by Michael Keaton. And then his daughter was Sam Thompson, played by Emma Stone. And how did you feel like those themes were portrayed? What was challenging in their relationship? And how did that work on screen?
Well, I didn't think they had the best relationship because something about what the mom said about like the daughter, and she was, I don't know, upset, but he kind of kept her around, and I feel like she didn't really want that. And she also,
the dad keeping the daughter around.
Well, I don't know if she like really wanted to do that job, mm-hmm. being like helping him with the backstage and whatever, but and then the one part where she goes off on him saying how you're doing this play and yeah, yada yada yada, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, okay.
Because
that's good. And there was obviously some inner turmoil that he was wrestling with, like, you know, he wrestled with, even though she's there and she's helping and she's around and he's with her, he's not really present, right? Because he's so focused on his play and all the things, and like he's really preoccupied and he's not emotionally available, if that makes sense. And, you know, I think there's inner turmoil that he's feeling, that he's wrestling with, that, you know, he wants to, like, apparently that's been the case her whole life and he hasn't really been there. But, you know, he's unpacking what those feelings are and trying to change. Or at least that's the appearance that I get. All right, what else? What are themes?
Mental health themes, reality versus surrealism.
Yeah, how does that show up? I mean, there's a lot of dynamics of mental health and what's real, what's not.
I thought it was real when he was like throwing the stuff around,
like he
without
was,
him doing it.
Yeah, like his powers.
Yeah, I thought that was real, but yeah, I realized that's probably something to do with mental health.
But maybe it was.
It was real?
I think so. I think he had those powers because the opening scene, right? He's sitting there meditating and he's floating off of the ground, right? So there's some kind of...
Well, it doesn't mean it's real.
That's true. It could be surreal. Like that could be in his mind, but that the way that it depicted it kind of made you question.
Yeah. In the beginning, I thought it was real and he had all these powers. I thought he was some kind of superhero, but near the end when he was flying, he wasn't actually flying. He was in a taxi because the taxi driver ran back in, was like, "Hey, where's my money?" after he ran into the theater. So I was like, wait, so he's not really flying?
Right.
So it was really all in his head.
But when he jumped out the window towards the end, was he flying?
Well,
because
the daughter didn't, she looked down, nothing was there. She looked up and then she realized.
And she started smiling.
Yeah, like he was flying, but I don't know.
Yeah. But it was great. It was great the way they illustrated that, right? Like it still kind of leaves you questioning, wait, was that real? Was it not real? And even in Ed Norton's character, Mike, oh gosh, what was... Mike Schinner, he was supposed to be the ringer actor they brought in to save the show. When he's having a conversation, he was talking about what happens on stage is real and what happens off stage is all fake. Right? So there's that play on what's real and what isn't.
And that connects to the thing with his powers?
Or? Right, yeah. Yeah, so... How do you feel like film wise they did illustrating these different themes?
I think they did good. Like I could tell that's what they were like trying to portray.
Yeah.
But did it
feel forced? Did it feel natural?
It felt natural. I didn't feel like anything was like they're trying to hit anything too hard. Yeah. I thought it was a really good movie. I didn't think.
Me too. Yeah. I mean, I was so blown away by all the dynamics. What else? What other themes?
What is art, theater versus film? What is that word?
Dichotomy. Yeah. Remember when he had the conversation with the critic?
Yeah.
That's what?
She was telling him like, you'll never be a good person to do theater because all you know is the movies because you're just a Hollywood actor or whatever. Just did Birdman, those stupid superhero movies.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that interesting? So what I find really interesting and ironic in that element was Hollywood, as far as the Oscars are concerned, and there's been many very high-level, prominent directors that say superhero movies aren't film. They aren't artistic. They aren't. So this theme is kind of on the nose with that one. And, you know, she's breaking down, oh yeah, Hollywood film actors aren't real artists,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's that whole tension between theater actors that are doing it in real time. You know, they're singing, they're dancing, they have they're not only acting, they've got all their lines memorized and they're all the movements and everything, and it's a live performance in front of the audience, as opposed to, oh, something behind the camera and I can edit, right? And I do my line over. You're not doing do-overs in theater.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that tension that they talk about that's very real. How do you feel like emotionally that was portrayed in the film? Do you feel like, shoot, that felt authentic, or?
I mean, it felt authentic. I don't know. I didn't expect it from the critic girl, but mm-hmm. it was really like.
You didn't expect her to be all.
Yeah. Right. I didn't expect that. At least not that aggressive.
You didn't expect her to be that aggressive.
Yeah, but it felt very real.
And yeah.
Enticing.
Absolutely. What about the scene where he gets locked out, like out
the back naked door,
and he's running in his underwear. His tidy whities. He's running around,
yeah.
And he runs around the front of the building and goes into the theater, and all these people are taking video mm-hmm. and snapping pics for social media and stuff.
And they're all saying, "Oh, is that Birdman? Is that Birdman?"
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, but what about the difference between the traditional advertising that they were using and how well that was working versus the social media and how that changed, like after that had happened, like it got sold out?
Mm-hmm.
What about the difference there? How did that hit you?
Like how before he was doing just not normal advertising, but like showing his face on the screen and on the theater thing.
Yeah, they had the playbills,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
you know, and they had the posters and like the traditional marketing, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes running around in the...
Yeah.
And they were the practice... I forget what they're called when they do the practice ones, but they're open... Yeah, shame on me for forgetting what that was. But and then that scene, that thing happened on social, and then boom, like his daughter was showing him, like, mm-hmm. "Hey, you got 70,000 views."
And yep.
Not that going to run around out in the streets of New York in your underwear is like the thing to do, but
yeah.
Apparently it helped, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is? I mean, did that resonate more with you? Like, did you feel like, yeah, duh, that's what you should have been doing in the first place? Or,
well, I don't think running out in your underwear, but I think it was just the element of embarrassment that mm-hmm. I was like, oh my gosh, this famous guy is in his underwear and looks like he's out of character. Like, so I don't know. I think that was what made people want to go and see it, because they're like, what is he doing?
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time I've been hearing him since Birdman.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And he didn't seem super phased about being out in the middle of the crowd on the street in his underwear. Like, I would have been friggin' just like, screw it. I'm not going back in.
Yeah, I would have been just staying by the door.
I'm figuring something else out. I'm finding some trash bags or something.
And I wouldn't even have left the door. I would have just kept the robe on and just kept knocking. I don't mm-hmm. care. Like, but he was dedicated to go back and do that scene.
For sure.
So.
And how well did the scene work when he came in from the outside in his underwear? Like, remember, because that was in the middle of them running, doing this run through.
Mm-hmm.
And his character comes walking in, like, and he's full in character as he's walking in. Mm-hmm. Like, he's doing his lines, and then he's doing the hand, you know, the fake handgun because he didn't have one. And then the prop guy handed it to him as he's going on stage. I mean, how well did you feel like that worked?
Well, I think, wasn't it the rest of the show he did it, like, perfectly?
Yeah.
Yeah, it went really well, so.
Mm-hmm. Like, I almost wanted to see that happen again in the real show.
Mm-hmm.
Because it worked so well. Like, just seeing his level of commitment was really inspiring in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we kind of talked a little bit about superpowers, you know, what was real and what was in his head, right? Like, did he have real superpowers and whatnot? And the themes that, you know, the things that we think versus what's real, which is another great layer of tension. I think that's one of the things that I really enjoy, because there were so many different layers. There's so much going on and so much complexity. But yet at the same time, it was so eloquently and just delivered so well that all the layers landed well.
Mm-hmm.
So Regan Thompson, he's a faded actor famous for playing a superhero named Birdman in a film trilogy from 89 to 92. And is tormented by the mocking of critical internal voice of Birdman, and frequently visualizes himself performing feats of levitation and telekinesis. And Regan is trying to regain recognition by writing, directing, and starring in this Broadway adaptation of Ray Carver's short story, What We Talk About When We Talk About Love. However, the Birdman voice wants Regan to return to the blockbuster cinema and insists that he is essential to Regan's identity. And then, so let's kind of break down just the different characters and their performances, the actors' performances. So you have Michael Keaton, who's plays Birdman, aka Regan Thompson. Edward Norton, who plays Mike Shiner. Emma Stone, who plays Sam, which is his daughter. Zach Galifianakis plays Jake, who's like his partner, producer for the theater show. Naomi Watts plays Leslie, and
the brunette was the girlfriend, I thought, because she was talking about how she was having his baby.
Was Andrea Risenborough who played Laura. Yep. Amy Ryan played Sylvia, and then there's a bunch of other people. It's quite an amazing cast, actually. Anyway, how did you feel like the chemistry was between the actors?
I thought it was good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the chemistry was good. I thought all of the acting was good.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, Edward Norton totally took me by surprise. I know Edward Norton's a great actor, and I appreciate a lot of things that he's done, but he really took me by surprise in this one. Like, I mean, the degree of confidence that he had on the stage versus his display of a lack of confidence when he wasn't on the stage, and the dynamics that played into that. And just, you know, there's elements that were endearing and there's other elements that were off-putting. And I mean, he just delivered a dynamic performance that I was really, I don't know if surprised is a word, because I know he's in Fight Club, he was awesome. Did you see that? Mm-hmm. Did you see Fight Club? Has just amazing acting chops. But for some reason, I was taken back a little bit and just like, okay, this is really awesome. I mean, I there are moments where I forget they were acting.
Mm-hmm.
And I think watching a film, and you know they're acting because you're watching a film and it's in the thing, but then like you get totally drawn in to the character and you forget that they're acting, and you really feel like they're portraying the emotion and the essence of who that character is, whew, man, that's another level. That's and I think the whole cast did that. Michael Keaton obviously winning Best Actor Golden Globe and getting the nomination for the Oscar for that film. Yeah, I mean, the complexity of his character with all the different things that were going on. Yeah, that was amazing. How'd you feel like Emma Stone's portrayal was? I mean, you're a daughter. She was playing a daughter. And did you feel like she was bringing those emotions and that performance really well?
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, she went off and she put her dad in check, which is like, wow, that's...
Oh, yeah, when he came in and was like trying to bust her for smoking weed or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was amazing.
Yeah, she did really good.
Yep. I mean, what are some scenes that really stood out to you, like from an acting perspective? Like what jumped out that really landed for you or didn't land for that matter?
I don't think anything didn't land. I liked when, I don't know, liked is the right word, but I thought it was interesting. What's Emma Stone? Who does she play?
Sam. Regan's daughter.
When Sam was on the roof and then Mike came out and they had a moment and it was interesting because they were talking. I don't remember.
Because that happened twice.
Yeah.
Right? They ended up on the roof twice. The first time, like there was tension there, but they didn't kiss. Right? Or did they the first time they were? I don't think
they
did.
I thought they did.
I thought that was the second time.
I thought they did. And then Mike was like, I'm not good for you or something.
Can't do this.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the cinematic, some of the technical stuff. So the cinematography, the use of like the long one shot, the one shot sequences. Now, there was multiple shots, but it felt like they did the whole thing in one shot. You know what I mean? Like they didn't film this scene and then cut and then go to another scene. There they fade and they dip out, you know, and that type of thing. It felt like the camera was following them around and just rolling the whole time. How did you feel about that? How did that lend to the story or take away from the story, or did it distract or did it support? Like, how did that feel for you?
I thought it supported the story. I kind of felt like it tied into the theater or the play.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it was all shot in one shot, then there would be no mess ups, just like live action theater. So,
Okay. Yeah. I didn't think about that. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kind of like, hey, if we're doing this in one shot, we're not doing retakes, you know, where everything has to work well from start to finish. Yeah. That's awesome. What about that made it feel supportive, like for an emotional standpoint, or I mean, that's a great assessment, like how tying that in to the theater aspect. I didn't think about that. It's really good. But anything else, any other elements of that aspect that
I don't know for emotional. What do you think?
I think it drew me in faster. I think because it wasn't like, you know, the challenge from when you're editing and you're doing these jump cuts or you're doing these, you know, fast cuts or you're cutting from one to another thing. Subconsciously, that breaks the flow, right? So it's like, I mean, we're used to it because we see it all the time and the way films are made and have been for a long time. But when you do those really long shots like that, it flowed. There's a couple of things that I can compare to, like the movie 1917. I don't know if you saw that, but we should go back and watch it. And it was this World War I film. And it was following these two English soldiers that were going in to rescue one of their brothers across enemy lines. Well, a lot of that footage is this big, long, single one shot. And it just feels like you're there with them.
Mm-hmm.
It pulls you into like, oh, I'm actually in the hallway, or I'm in the back stage area of the theater, and I'm following Reagan's character through, and I'm actually there. It makes me feel like I'm there.
And that's what you want.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a really challenging technique to use. It also reminds me of another video was Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake.
Yep. Justin Timberlake.
Music video?
Music video. And it's called his song Say Something. That's all done in one shot. Now, I don't know if it was one take. They might have had to do multiple takes. But if you watch that video, it's all done in one shot where he goes up the elevator and the guy comes out, you know, and the camera comes out of the elevator with him. And it's pretty amazing. We should go back and watch that too.
Mm-hmm.
But it just draws you in. And I think the use of that, I noticed that right away. Right away as he, you know, as he walks out of his dressing room and into the hallway and the camera is following him. And those are usually spots where they're going to cut because, you know, you're transitioning from the bedroom out into the hallway into another place. And you don't need to show all of that. A lot of times if you're showing all that, it slows down the pacing. And because of how things are edited, it makes you feel like, okay, come on, get there faster. But this didn't feel like that at all. So yeah, just tagging the acting a little bit further. I mean, we talked about Michael Keaton's performance. I mean, Michael Keaton is one of those actors that is so just on a whole nother level. He can play a character like Batman, and then he can play this character. I mean, he's so versatile between all these different aspects. Just amazing.
Isn't he coming back to play Batman? And
I think so.
The Flash movie?
I think so, yeah. I think he's playing.
And then Ben Batman. Affleck is somebody else,
right.
Which is funny.
Right. We're going back to the whole Batman thing. So here's the interesting thing is I didn't realize this was originally released in 2014. And I'm like, oh, this is about Vulture from Spider-Man. And Spider-Man wasn't released until, 2017. Spider-Man Homecoming, the first...
Tom Holland
Spider-Man. And
I didn't even realize that was Michael Keaton was the Vulture.
Yes, Michael Keaton was a Vulture. And I thought... because I hadn't watched Birdman and it kind of fell off for me when it first released, I thought this was about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting is it's kind of the other way around. And there is a scene towards the end where he's kind of hallucinating these different things that are happening. And Spider-Man is in it. Spider-Man is dancing.
Oh, yeah, you said... He was dancing like on the street.
Yeah. And it's in a crowd of all these other things, all these other characters and all this other distraction of like past or memories or different things of that nature. But I see Spider-Man and I'm like, oh, wait. Yeah. And, you know, it was like, okay, he's playing this post Spider-Man. But it turns out that wasn't the case at all. He's playing this role pre-Spider-Man and then ends up as Vulture in Spider-Man, which I think is hilarious because...
So you think they have a connection?
Well, for sure. I mean, obviously, Michael Keaton's the same actor. There's, you know, I don't know if Kevin Feige saw Birdman was like, hey, we're looking for Vulture. And they're like, okay, we're casting Michael Keaton for Vulture, who happens to be a bird, who happens to have superpowers, mm-hmm. if you will. Yeah, and we talked a little bit about Ed's portrayal of Mike Shiner. And then what about the rest of the supporting cast? How did you feel like their performance was, right, as a supporting cast? And, you know, Zach Galifianakis and everybody else that were brought around together. How did you feel like the casting was? How do you feel like their delivery of their part, et cetera, et cetera?
I thought it was perfect. I think everybody gave what they should have gave in the acting department. Like, it felt real. Nobody was like sticking out as a bad actor or actress. Like, all the supporting actors were really good.
Yeah. I mean, Naomi Watts was a bit of a supporting cast. Amy Ryan was a bit of a supporting cast, and they just did amazing. They really did. I think you hit it right on. It was perfect. I mean, it really was. I mean, obviously, it doesn't win all these awards because it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody showed up and they delivered their A game. Okay, let's talk about this. Let's talk about the use of music and sound in this film. This really hit me in a big way.
What the music? You?
The music.
Yeah. It was a big staple. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep.
Unpack that a little bit more. How so? How was it used? How did it hit you? How did it support the emotion or the story? Or was it distracting?
It wasn't distracting. It helped add elements of emotion, and it like made you anticipate what was going to happen next. Like, along with the long shot, if it was just like silent, then I feel like it would be boring. But since they added the music, it was kind of like,
yeah, the music kept it moving.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. That was great.
Yep.
Yeah. The music just was another, just it hit the ball out of the park on this one for me too. Cause the tension in the music, some of the dissonant chords in the music, as far as like, you know, they weren't harmony. They were dissonant. They mm-hmm. were clashing, because he's feeling this tension or this anger. And so the music supported that feel, yeah. made you feel anxious or that tension at the same time. And it was so tastefully done. And then the way that the drummer would show up in different places, right? They actually have him playing live in the shot, right? It wasn't just music underscore. It wasn't just stuff that they were laying in, or it was, you're hearing it from another background or whatnot. But the actual, you know, there's scenes where the musician's in there, like especially the drummer, like he showed up a couple of different times. How did that?
I can't remember that.
You don't remember? I remember the one scene where the drum, like he's walking through the room and like he's wrestling with all these things. And I don't remember if it was because he had just seen Mike kissing Sam, you know, backstage. He's feeling insecure about all the stuff that the critic had said to him. And he's wrestling internally with the voice of, you know, Birdman, and the, you know, that tension. And the drummer is actually in one of the rooms that he's walking through. And it's interesting because the drummer is out of place, right? It doesn't, it's like, oh, the drummer's like randomly in this room, it feels like. But because of the music and how it fit with the emotion and everything that else that was going on, it was like an exclamation point at the end of the sentence. It was really, I thought, was just next level. The jazz music and how it creatively added and supported the story. Obviously getting nominated for sound editing and sound mixing. What about the messages? Like what message, you know, the Alejandro has a message in the story, right? And maybe let's, you know, talk about the commentary on celebrity culture or that in social media, or, you know, talk about the portrayal of mental illness in the creative process, right? How many people struggle with some degree of mental illness on one level, but yet like they're super genius creatives on another level? Or the lasting legacy and cultural significance of theater and film and the tension that lies in therein. What do you think about that? What do you think about the messages, like walking away from this film? Like what was the message that really hit you and that you're walking away with?
I think that they showed him it was like hard to get away from the superhero movies,
mm-hmm.
but like he tried to do the theater, and I think it worked out well because of, but under the circumstances, because they got the video of him in the underwear. So I don't know, but wasn't there something said about the gun? And it was like, was it Edward Norton that said it didn't look real enough, mm-hmm. so he got a real gun and then shot himself at the mm-hmm. end of the play.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
I think that showed something.
Yeah, because the original gun was fake. It had like a little orange tip on it that communicates to everybody that it's fake.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. One of my first gigs was getting props for a short film, and one of the props I had to get was a gun. And so this kind of reminded me of that. This is many, many years ago. And the prop guns don't have those. The prop guns look like real guns and they're weighted so that they feel like real guns, but the mechanisms don't work. And then the slide mechanism works, but there's no hammer, there's no internal parts. So it couldn't actually. And then mm-hmm. some people use airsoft guns, which look like real guns, except, you know, they shoot little plastic pellets. But yeah, that was interesting. And it was interesting that he found a real gun. I don't know where he had it or if he had already had it. He knew it was real. He comes walking in. They're putting the wig on. And they said, hey, what about the blood pack, right?
Yeah,
because the cat, when he hits it, it goes off. And he's like, oh, I don't need it.
That's what indicated to me that, oh, he's going to shoot himself on this.
Like, for real. Yeah. Like, he's trying to.
And then the fact that everyone was silent after he shot himself for, like, a minute. And then they started applauding because they're like, this looks a little too real.
Right. Yeah, so, like, what just happened? And, yeah, that was interesting. It was, like, cool because he was like really successful with the play, not cool because he was trying to kill himself. Mm-hmm. Like we don't know, is he alive, is he not alive, is he there, is he like totally bleeding out, like what's happening right mm-hmm. now? Yeah. And so what was the message that you walked away from with that,
with the gun?
Yeah, or I just mean just the, you know, it's like Mike says that and he's thinking about the play and he's thinking about the performance. He's not thinking about Regan's mental health, right? And he had already seen he's not in a good spot, right? Like he's wrestling with all these things. And it was a great foreshadowing in the storytelling of what was going to happen. It's like, oh, you kind of saw it coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, uh-oh. But it's like, man, do we need to be more sensitive to what people are going through, right? Mike was going through a lot of his own stuff already, you know, like he was struggling with his own identity to some degree. But is that what you meant as far as like him being sensitive to those things? Maybe being more cautious about what he was saying to people?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What else? What other thoughts do you have or messages on that?
Do you think the director was trying to say that like Hollywood is an art as well? Or just theater is, because he ended up doing theater?
Yeah, that's a good question. What do you think?
I don't know.
I mean, do you think filmmaking is an art? Do you think that
yes.
acting and what they did
after
was
watching
an art?
Babylon, I think there's a lot that goes to like through making movies. So
yeah, I think. For sure. Well, and I appreciate you bringing that up. So we'll unpack Babylon on our next episode. And that's a deep dive, especially into old Hollywood and a lot of these tensions. These theater versus film types of tensions show up in that film as well. What a great movie to illustrate that film acting and theater acting is acting. I don't think there's a difference. I think there's a lot of snobbery that happens. It's like, oh, this is a Broadway theater. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And not like Broadway's inaccessible, because it's not. I don't think film acting is any less acting, especially in this illustration of than theater acting. It's just, it's a different form of the same type of art.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be like saying, oh, you're a really good oil painter, but, you know, watercolor painters aren't really painters.
Yeah.
You're both painters. You're just using different mediums doing the same type of art.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. I think Alejandro knocked it out of the park. Obviously, a lot of other people did too. And I was just tickled to death to see Spider-Man dancing in the background. And it really threw me. I'm still kind of a little bit in a loop here in shock, thinking that this actually came before what ended up happening. I mean, it's funny because he did Batman before this. So he did a superhero movie before this. So he knew all of that.
Is Bat considered a bird?
But
the names have close... Batman, Birdman.
So I'm sure he drew from that.
Mm-hmm.
But what do you think this film, particularly its lasting legacy or cultural significance, will be? Like, what's the exclamation point on the legacy of what Alejandro and Michael Keaton and company delivered with this?
Like the theme?
Yeah, I mean, what's the lasting legacy? Like, what are people going to remember most? What's the cultural significance of Birdman and why it's so good and why people should watch it?
Well, I think it's because it's based on this celebrity's like mental health, and it shows that he's also a person too, and he's like not still trying to be relevant, but just like how much it takes to still be relevant and still be talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Still be like not forgotten, but that's how I feel, because, you know.
Yeah, that's really good. And how much is chasing that relevance play into his mental health?
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, is chasing that and being in the limelight or being famous or whatever his definition of relevance was. Like, what is that? What kind of effect does that have on his mental faculties, and does it magnify that, you know, that struggle? Yeah, for me, I think the cultural significance is just that. It's a great illustration of the tension. I think there's so many complexities and layers to it. I think just the way that it illustrates mental health, it illustrates the tension between different attitudes and polarizations that can happen, like between theater and film, and the tension there. I mean, the irony is that this delivers such a powerful performance. It's clear. Yes, it is art. You know, the thing that the critic said, right, is like, you're not an artist, you're a celebrity, right? Kind of condemning him, thinking like, you're not an actor. You don't know how to perform. You're just this famous celebrity from this film. Like, you know, and that tension there, it's like, well, yeah and no, right? This movie is something that people should put in their top 10 list and really meditate and unpack all the layers. And I'm excited to go back and watch it again and to see what areas did I not pick up on.
Mm-hmm.
It's like watching Fight Club again. And it's like, wait, what? What just happened? There wasn't like this massive twist like in Fight Club where your mind's just blown and the story was like not what you thought it was. But, you know, there are a lot of subtleties in this that I think are delivered so well that it definitely deserves a rewatch. So if you happen to be listening and you haven't seen Birdman, I highly encourage, would you encourage people to go see it?
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. It's on all the streaming platforms. It is time well spent. Go watch it and enjoy.
Is it on Netflix? I don't think so.
I'm not sure if it's on Netflix or not, but what was it on? Which platform was it on that we watched it on? HBO Max?
I don't know.
Or was that Amazon Prime? I know it's on. It's on a few of the platforms, I'm sure, if you're really looking for it. So yeah, there you have it. I mean, that's Birdman kind of in a 1 hour long podcast, breaking down all the things. The mm-hmm. lasting impact of this film on contemporary cinema, I think the impact is keep doing the thing. It's interesting to contrast this with what we just watched, which was Quantumania, because they're so polar opposites,
mm-hmm.
right? Quantumania is this CGI rich MCU film. Oh, it happens to be a superhero story, mm-hmm. which is really funny. But just a lot of VFX and a lot of eye candy, which this one didn't have much of that at all, if any. And it was really purely, you know, connecting on a heart level and walking beside the characters in their emotion, in their wrestle, in their struggle, and their dreams, and their disappointments, and everything in between. And so such polar opposites in you know, approach in all the aspects. But man, yeah, it just, this is something that people need to point back to going, This is what we're about. This is what acting's about. This is what filmmaking is about. This is the art, the epitome of the art of film. So, and if you've seen it already, why not go back and watch it again? Right?
Yep.
Would you watch it again? Yep.
I've already forgotten bits and pieces, so.
Yeah, I guess we're going to have to go watch it again. We'll take our own advice and,
yep.
and revisit it sometime soon. And then watch Spider-Man and see how his character and Vulture and what Michael Keaton does with Vulture, knowing that he did Birdman first, and mm-hmm. seeing how that plays out. I know it's not a related character, but sure are a lot of similarities.
Yep.
All right. So do you want to wrap this up?
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging with us. We'll see you next time.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.